Hello and welcome to the latest building podcast. I'm Jamie Harris, Buildings Digital Editor. Coming up on the show...
London is being destroyed by investment residential property, the greatest threat to London at the moment.
We speak to the former London Planning Chief on the future of the capital. Also coming up...
So this will affect everybody from architects to project managers, it'll affect installers on buildings, and even building managers.
What does the Hackett Review have in store for construction? And how does the sector take it forward? All that and more. Stick around. The City of London's skyline has provoked many a controversy. Former Planning Chief Peter Rees reckons Londoners should be worrying instead about the rising forest of new-build apartment blocks, which he predicts will be derelict within a century. He spoke to Elizabeth Hopkirk, Assistant Editor at Buildings' sister title, Building Design.
I'm Peter Rees and I'm Professor of Places and City Planning at University College London. And from 1985 until 2014, I was the City Planning Officer of the City of London.
I met Peter Rees on a balcony overlooking Pancras Square in London's King's Cross. In front of us, we could see the two station buildings, and directly below us, Google's new headquarters under construction. So excuse the noise. In the distance was the City of London skyline, for which Rees was largely responsible.
I have, as you noticed, positioned myself where there's a pillar between me and the view of the City of London.
Peter was adamant that the high-rise buildings he was trying to hide from should be a last resort.
You should never build towers if there's any other option. They will always have some kind of negative impact on people and the environment, either because people are shut away in them and separated from real life outside, or because they're spending increasing amounts of their life waiting for elevators, or because of the impact it has on you when you are in the outside space with the microclimate and the way that it makes you feel less part of a place and more subjugated by large developments and the power of capital. Having said that, there is a distinct difference between the cluster of towers with which I was involved in the city and those we see across the rest of the skyline as we look around. The towers in the City of London are office towers. They're all full. They're all contributing to the economy. They're all providing workplace. They're all providing activity, which is, in my mind, a positive virtue. The other buildings are mostly there for investment, for people who don't actually want the product. They simply want the investment it represents. They, you might say, are parking their money in the apartments as if they were using a pile of safety deposit boxes. Throughout the first two decades of directing planning in the city, I tried every possible option other than towers for housing the increased office capacity that was needed following the deregulation of financial services back in 1986. We tried 10-storey campus developments in places like Broadgate and Paternoster Square. These were enormously successful. They were just the right height not to impact negatively on the surroundings. They always came with wonderful new open spaces, which people either involved in the buildings or not have enjoyed ever since. And to me, it's a great pleasure that 30 years on, I see the buildings of Broadgate being replaced while the spaces remain. Because to me, what makes a place is not the buildings, but the spaces.
Peter has since moved on to academia. He's a professor of places at UCL's Bartlett School of Planning.
When I made the switch from practice to academia 5 years ago, it was suggested to me that my title at the Bartlett should be Professor of City Planning, because that's what I'd been spending my years doing. And I said, I thought that sounded boring, that I prefer to be called Professor of Places. And they said to me, well, what does that mean? And I said, well, I've no idea, but I'm really looking forward to finding out.
Where he is applying his strategic vision to the rest of London.
One of the first things I do with the students every year, with the undergraduates and the postgraduates, is we take them out on a river trip. And with the undergraduates, I do a commentary all the way from Woolwich to Battersea, which means I lose my voice and probably they lose heart in planning. But I show them what's happening along the River Thames as a cross-section, a transect through London. And all the way now from, well, all the way in fact from Woolwich, but certainly from Greenwich, up to Battersea, we see these piles of safety deposit boxes. If it's early evening, there are no lights on, there's nobody home. We see ghost towns being created at Nine Elms. And I find that very depressing.
Peter's concern for the future of London can be boiled down to the very nature of owning property.
It's also worrying as to what will happen in the future, because people have bought these apartments on 125-year leases. There's no way of reassembling this property for redevelopment for over a century. And at a time when London is short of land, it seems crazy to have wasted that amount of central London land on a product which will not only be underused, but for which there is no maintenance mechanism. I'm very worried to see high-rise buildings sold on 125-year leases, where there's no way that the sinking funds established will ever cover the cost of major refurbishment of those buildings during that 125-year life. I fear dereliction. I fear that in 80, 90, 100 years' time, we will have Thames lined with derelict tyres, for which there's no mechanism to maintain, short of compulsory purchase, which is going to be a very expensive activity. And I seriously wonder how we're going to put together those pieces of the jigsaw to recreate the sites, to develop them for a positive set of land uses.
So, how does London fix this? Peter thinks that a revamp of the planning system, which would allow local authorities to distinguish between different types of homes and enable them to grant or deny permission based on local needs, is the way we should go.
I think that we need to be reinvigorating planning, looking again at our land use system. The use classes order is our only planning tool of any strength in this country.
But will it ever happen? Not all that soon, he thinks.
I have no hope for anything which involves party politicians. I believe that we're suffering from political gangrene in this country, and the only thing that gives me any hope is the collapse one by one of the major parties. The Lib Dems have gone, Tories look as if they've had it, and thank God Labour's biting the dust. It's a sign that the people are fed up with being governed from dinner parties in Islington. Labour or Conservative, the people making the decisions were part of an establishment that served their own interests, to the point where large parts of the country now no longer see the relevance of central government.
But it's not all bad. There are still areas we can be proud of.
To me, that's all good, and I'm still proud to take my students to Broadgate and show them what was created and what is now being recreated. As proud as I am to be taking my students through King's Cross and showing them what you can do with a wonderful regeneration project that incorporates good new buildings, wonderful new spaces, and keeps and adapts the best buildings from the past. There is much good work going on in London, and although there's much to be a grumpy old man about, which I'm becoming a very good proponent of that act, There is much to praise and much to pass on as a good starting point for the next generation.
Of course, this is just his opinion. I spoke to other specialists about the derelict towers issue, and some of them were more hopeful. Construction law specialist Sheena Sood, a partner at Beale & Co Solicitors, says it'll all come down to the strength of individual leases. She also says some of the towers are becoming key parts of the skyline and so will always be in demand by investors. Well, I'm sure she's right about some of the best towers, but I'm not convinced that's going to be the case for all of them.
Dame Judith Hackett's report, Building a Safer Future, has proposed a resetting of the industry's attitude towards risk, regulation and project delivery. Among her recommendations was the suggestion to set up a new regulatory body and for the industry itself to own the responsibility of building safety. The consultation on the next steps for the review is expected imminently, and next month Building Live is hosting a half-day conference looking at the lessons learned so far, as well as the implications of the government consultation on competence. Joining me is Thomas Lane, Building's Group Technical Editor. So, Thomas, this is a critical time for the Hackett Review and for the sector as a whole.
Well, yes. Although I would say that politically there has actually been a very much bigger focus on combustible cladding. So if you remember when the Hackett reviews were published in May last year, there was actually quite a lot of anger around the fact that they didn't even mention banning combustible cladding. So the government, off its own back, then consulted on a combustible cladding ban and implemented that ban in December last year. And what this actually means is that you can't use any combustible materials in the external walls of buildings over 18 metres tall. So this has actually taken effect now. So it's having an effect on anyone who is delivering high-rise residential buildings. So it's pretty immediate, the impact. So, for example, Swan Housing, it's a housing association who have invested in a CLT factory for its own developments, has actually had to rethink what it's going to do when it comes to building buildings over 18 metres tall. And also, there's been a big focus on replacing flammable cladding on existing private buildings. That's had a lot of media coverage. And the government recently announced it would underwrite the cost of replacing cladding on those buildings if this couldn't be recovered from building owners. So and so there's this kind of nervousness around the use of materials on low-rise buildings, and there's also concerns around insurance. The thing about the Hackett Review, it's much more wide-ranging. It's meant to really tackle a whole broad range of safety uses across the industry, and it's still very much a work in progress.
Okay. I mean, obviously, Thomas, you've covered this topic quite extensively over the last few years, and it is nearing the two-year anniversary of the Grenfell Tower fire as well. Are you feeling there's a sense of urgency at the moment to implement this radical change that you've suggested in the way that construction operates?
Yes, I think the two-year anniversary of the disaster is going to focus minds considerably. Really on sort of progress, or you could argue on the lack of progress, on the changes needed to produce safer high-rise residential buildings and other types of buildings as well, in the round, not necessarily just fire, but all aspects of building safety. For example, Dame Judith Hackett has been actually quite critical about the seven-month delay between the publication of her report in May last year and the formal response to it from the government in December last year. So in December last year, the government then said they would consult on next steps in terms of implementing the review. And they said that they would implement the recommendations of her review in full. It's really a case of what does that look like for the industry. And this is what this consultation will cover off. So the consultation would be looking at what the duties of the clients, designers and contractors are, what sort of enforcement regime there would be, and other things, for example, the sort of information that those duty holders would have to hold and make available throughout the life of a building in a digital format. So that we were promised this consultation by spring this year. The word is it'll come out before the anniversary of the second anniversary of the fire, which is on the 14th of June. So we're really any day now we're expecting to actually see that. Of course, that's just a consultation. Then there has to be a period of time for the industry to respond. It's going to be 2 to 3 months before that consultation will be open. Then the government will go away and digest the feedback from the consultees and then come up with concrete proposals. And it is, they're talking about sort of introducing new regulatory regimes and that kind of thing. And it's going to require some money and reorganisation of those bodies to actually make this happen. So I can't really see much happening before the sort of end of this year.
Okay, so it's, like I say, it's going to be a particularly difficult for a few months, really, of sort of getting through all of these various steps that we need to get through. Moving on, I mean, of course, the government as well established the joint regulators group, sort of essentially to trial the new regulatory body. Can you tell us a bit about that?
That's right. So the joint regulators group is three organisations. That's the Local Authority Building Control, the Fire Brigade, and the Health and Safety Executive. Now, they are going to ultimately be the three bodies that make up the Joint Competent Authority, which will be the new regulatory body going forward. So the joint regulators group is the Joint Competent Authority under another name. But at this stage, what they're doing is trying out how the new regulatory regime might work. And this is meant to be feeding into the consultation, which we're expecting at any time now.
Okay.
And the other thing that's worth mentioning is the work of the Competence Steering Group. So competence and the competence of people in the industry has been a big concern, and one of the reasons why Grenfell happened is just that simply people aren't really necessarily doing what is expected of them. So Competence Steering Group has looked at coming up with a framework for improving, for defining competence and ensuring competence is maintained and improving it over time. So this will affect everybody from architects to project managers, it will affect installers on buildings and even building managers. And it'll probably include a new body who will actually oversee all this. And as I say, they'll come up with this framework for defining and monitoring competence, and often that should be checked. And that report is due out again at the end of this month.
Okay, so we've got a lot to look forward to the next week or so, essentially. Now, I mentioned that Building Live Club's first event on this subject is to be held on the 13th of June at the Bloomsbury Hotel in London. What could delegates expect to hear at this event next month?
Well, we've got quite a lot going on. So we were talking just now about the Joint Regulators Group. So we've actually got representatives from those three bodies at the group. We've got quite senior people who are going to be talking about the work that they've been doing, and also what that could mean for the Joint Competent Authority when it's finally formed, how it might work. And as part of that discussion, we've got some industry people as well to sort of ask some questions around the practicalities of this, how this will work. Following on from that, we've got Graham Watts, who's the Chief Executive of the CIC and also the Chair of the Competence Steering Group, who will present the conclusions of that group. And then finally, we've got a debate asking about what these lessons to date mean for the whole supply chain. So as part of that, we've got the early adopters. So there's eight organisations have been trialling some of the Hackett recommendations within their organisations. You know, for example, things like maintaining a digital record of the makeup of a building that they're doing, and ensuring that workers are aware of their safety obligations. So we're going to bring all this together in one session and discuss what does this mean for the industry.
Okay, Thomas Lane, thanks for joining me. You can find out more about the event and book your place, as well as more information about the Building Live Club at building-live.co.uk/Hackett Review. That's it for this week's podcast, and indeed this series of building podcasts. We hope you've enjoyed listening over the last few weeks, and we will be returning with a new series in June. As always, please do let us know your thoughts and feedback on these podcasts by leaving a review on iTunes or by emailing building@building.co.uk. Don't forget, you can listen back to our archive of podcast episodes from this series and before by going to building.co.uk/podcasts or by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks once again for listening. I've been Jamie Harris. Until next time.